Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you.
Solid waste. Peace. Process.
The world is very different now.
Solid waste. Peace.
To remind process. America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Okay. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process. We just got done looking for car keys under the table.
We did. I thought that was going to go a lot better than it did.
Yeah, that's right.
You were at IOPS. This happens to me all the time.
Yeah. When the waitress says, "Excuse me, I have to get under the table." Why, yes, you do.
I saw something on Cinemax the other day, and it was a lot better than that.
Now you're left with a piece of paper and a pen.
Savage love.
Jeremy's making a serious face.
Time to get serious. We are recording now, Ron.
Yes.
He started, he kicked it off.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we didn't...
Let's see, let's put our serious face
we,
on.
We are live at, what, J.J. Twiggs Pizza
Balling?
And Pub.
In Manchester, Missouri.
In Manchester.
Come visit.
In beautiful downtown Manchester. Yes, this is our first on-location episode. So,
it's good so far.
So far, so good. We actually have beer.
We have beer.
We can see each other while we talk, which is...
That
well,
different?
It has its pros and its cons.
People are better heard and not seen.
I think the beer is going to help, though.
Always does.
So.
Why are you pointing at me?
Jeremy came more prepared than the rest of us. He has a list of... actually, I have a short list. I would like to talk about the most important story of 2011, which is that Oprah went off the air.
Ooh.
It was a tough day for all of us, I think.
Oprah went off the air!
Oh, she's not totally.
She's got her own network, so to speak. But how did she like, she copyrighted that musical interval? John Travolta! How do you get that one little pitch?
Oh, you know, Harley Davidson did the same thing with the sound of their engine.
That's right. Yeah, it's an Oprah sound. Oprah drives me crazy.
Wait a minute. The sound of a Harley engine is trademark?
I'm pretty sure they...
It's the same sound as a paint shaker at Home Depot, right? Sorry to all our Harley
Your Harley
fans
might
out
need
there.
A tune-up if it's sounding a paint shaker.
Yeah, I have serious Oprah hatred. Maybe that's a whole episode.
On the Man like Show, they once talked about the Oprahfication of America.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's hear
I
about
remember
such
that.
Things.
Well, it was a great episode. It was one of their first few episodes, I think, and I'm not sure they ever topped it with any other skit they did.
I don't know. The one they did on women's suffrage was pretty
that
good.
That was good. That was very good.
Tell us about America. Oprahfication.
Well, they were just showing how women are watching Oprah, and then they start buying into all the malarkey that she's spewing, and it... These women think they need to operate on this same wavelength. And
right.
Oprah is not, she's become something that's not the every man or every woman type of thing. You know, she's giving away cars and
right.
giving away all this other stuff and throws out these ideas, and her everyday life is nothing close to the everyday life
sure.
of the
sure.
general public.
So, yeah, right.
And you go to her show and get all hyped up and... You find diamond rings under your seat, and you think this is suddenly this right. is how life is, right. and it's not.
There's all out of the many things I hate about Oprah. We'll just list them in order. But one thing, for whatever reason, I can't stand is the mix of serious issues with blatantly commercial issues. So you'll have an issue, you know, when she's giving it away a car, it's not just a car. You'll get a Pontiac Sunfire or whatever it is. Is the, you know, and that it has a very commercial, like we're attuned to the fact that it's a reason why it's giving away a Pontiac Sunfire. It's not just a happenstance. There's some deal that's been worked to make the Sunfire the Sunfire. and we understand all that. But then that's the Monday episode and girls running around, oh my God, you get a car, you get a car. And then the next episode is like the plight of women in Uganda. Oh, so fascinating. like isn't it equally as commercial as anything else that's isn't it that is equally as brash and commercial as the Sunfire? She doesn't say, "What of women in Uganda?" Let's hear from Joshua Volta.
Well,
it drives me crazy a little bit.
We're doing good. Would you like to join us for our podcast?
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. What'd you have?
Dr. Puppet.
Yeah.
What if she is doing that? Okay, let's hear it from the women of Uganda. You know, wouldn't that cheapen that? Doesn't she need to?
I think the whole thing is cheap, is what I'm saying.
Oh, come on.
I don't think she's genuine. I think she's very disingenuous. She started those schools. I don't know enough about them. They've had some problems with abuse there at those schools. So what?
She has a good heart and stuff.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't really mean to talk about Oprah on the show, but...
Hey, you brought it up.
Since I brought it up, I'll just say that, you know, I think she did a lot better in the talk show genre than some of the other, you know, your Jerry Springers and Maury Povich's.
She's a game changer for sure.
Yeah. I mean, she made the conscious decision 20 years ago that I'm not going to do baby daddy shows and I'm not going to do, you know, all the sensationalistic kind of stories.
You do have to admire what she came from, though, and what she has become in one way.
Right.
It is amazing.
I'll give her that. I'll give her all that.
Yeah, and I respect her. And I think the fact that she parlayed one role in The Color Purple into a multi-billion-dollar industry, you got to give the woman some props.
Right, right. And how she's endlessly compelling. Like, yeah, she's like a whole empire of herself.
Right.
How do you create that? I can't imagine anybody that's quite like that.
But I have to call an end to the Oprah discussion. We gotta move.
I could talk all hour about it.
Ready to reveal some stuff that I knew.
It's
about
the one
Oprah
show that like if I'm Lefty Man, I could watch Sean Hannity and just look with amusement. But when I watch Oprah, it just like makes me boil, seethe underneath.
Wow.
All right.
Cool thing.
We're learning something about you, Rob. That's good. See, we wouldn't have gotten this in normal Stripe podcast.
Let's hear it, Rob.
What, we just bring up a topic?
Yeah, what do you got?
Okay, we'll stick with year in review before I start rambling about something else.
Okay.
So I want to ask the panel and our listeners, we had a tea party rising in the summer. And I give my Patriot hat tip to the Tea Party.
Your tricorner hat?
I'll tip my tricorner hat to them. And shoot a musket ball in the air in celebration. For them making their voices heard. And I think it's we already talked about the Tea Party, valid movement, good for them. What's the state of it now? What's the state of at the end of the year in 2011? And what do we predict for them to be doing in 2012? Do you think they're going to have an impact on the presidential race? Is it a 2011 phenomenon?
Well, you know, just off the top of my head, I'd have to say last year was the year of the Tea Party.
The year we just finished?
No, 2010.
2010
was the year. I mean, that was the year, you know, midterm elections. We got some new Tea Party candidates in the Congress.
Right, right.
And, you know.
People standing on street corners a lot.
I'm not sure that 2011 really was a Tea Party year. I didn't hear that much about them, really. I mean, Occupy Wall Street kind of consumed all the oxygen in the room.
Right.
But it could be... Things are very cyclic, so maybe 2012, as things develop, they start coming back around again.
I mean, the big focus is going to be on the Republican primary. And is anybody hitting that Tea Party message? Like I don't see.
Well,
don't,
Bachman started. She's kind of reignited things and tried to make a surge. I doubt it's really helping, but she's been in the news again lately. Visited like 13 different cities or 13 different places in one day, trying to drum up some support and get people to remember her for something.
The globe in one
she
day.
Pulled a Santa Claus. And, I think she's trying to get some recognition other than eating a corn dog. And
she's good at that. You got to do what you're good at.
We've come full circle now because our first episode was about Michelle Bachman. And,
but you think that's any traction? She's pulling 7% or something.
Well, NPR was saying the other morning she's tied with Ron Paul right now in the Iowa polls.
Is Ron Paul a Tea Party candidate?
Well,
I don't think so.
I have never viewed him that way, but, you know, it's interesting that Jon Stewart refers to him as a Tea Party. Like, he called him Patient Zero, you know, in the whole Tea Party movement, like the whole grassroots movement. He started it, you know, with his 2008 campaign. And, you know, there's some truth to that. I mean, the things that, you know, the ideas that he was promulgating are the same ideas the Tea Party is now written into their, you know, their core beliefs or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know that he's ever really associated himself with the Tea Party.
So what's the difference there? Yeah, how's that different? Because Ron Paul, to me, is the most consistently limited role of government throughout the platform, and the Republicans are all grabbing onto the Tea Party coattails trying to get some energy,
right.
But they're running away from Ron Paul like he's the plague. I don't think they want anything to do with him. So what's going on there? Like, if Ron Paul's the Tea Party man, how do you and the Republicans love the Tea Party, how are they also running away from Ron Paul? What am I missing here?
Well, Ron Paul's a Republican in name only. I mean, Not in the traditional sense of that phrase.
He's essentially a third party candidate.
He's a libertarian.
Right.
I mean, he's been calling himself a Republican for a long time now, but he is a libertarian.
Right. Much more than a Republican.
He ran in 1988 as a libertarian candidate for president. So, you know, he always has been a libertarian.
So he's like a Republican outsider, so he's going to get the derision of the establishment.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the party. Establishment, as you said, is never going to give him.
But love the Tea Party, and he's the most Tea Party, but not really. Fascinating.
Yeah, it is interesting that, you know, he seems to be right in the eye of the storm, so to speak, and yet nobody will even acknowledge him.
I'll give you my grand theory. Is the reason? All right, I'll go crazy lefty here on you. Is that the Republicans want to co-opt the Tea Party message for their own usage? And Ron Paul's not co-optable. You can't take a bit of Ron Paul.
Accurate.
You can't take a little chunk of him. You got
to
get the whole Paul.
There is some
truth to that. And they can't make Ron Paul work for them. And so even though he's actually embodies that message the best of anybody, I don't think they can use it for their ends, and so that's why there's a no-go.
Yeah.
Radical thought.
You're right.
Good summation there, Rob.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
He can't be used.
Right. Right. And I think Gingrich is trying. He's so smart about the way the system works.
I am simply flabbergasted that anyone is talking about him as a front runner.
I think he's a good mind.
I was flabbergasted when they were talking about Herman Cain as a front runner, and now it's Gingrich.
Why? Tell me why. Why Gingrich?
Well, I guess personally, I've never been a fan. And, you know, like, in 1994, I was still calling myself a Republican, and I was, like, completely jazzed at the Republican Revolution.
Right.
And, you know, Gingrich was obviously the architect
of
that
right.
and at the lead. But I was never a fan of him personally. I always thought he was a toolbox. And now, I mean, he is politically astute.
Right.
I think he's probably the most brilliant political strategist in the country, bar none.
Oh, yeah. He can ring the bells like nobody else can.
So, you know, his campaign seemed to have imploded early on when his whole staff left. And I've heard since then that, you know, the reason was that they weren't letting him strategize. Like, you know, he had his little inner circle of people that were like trying to run his campaign, but they weren't anywhere near as smart as he was, so
right.
you know, it was just loggerheads
right.
all the time,
right.
you know. And so when they left, suddenly now his campaign has life again, and everybody's saying, well, it's because he's running it, right. So, you know, I mean, the man's brilliant from a political standpoint, but I can't get behind him as a candidate.
What do you think about him, Republican man? You're supposed to represent them.
Yeah, I'm supposed to. I'm not very good, doing a very good job of that. I was not a fan back in the 90s. I was a Clinton supporter back then, and Newt was always going after Clinton.
Right.
So I didn't like that. I've heard one of the knocks on him is that he will make, this kind of goes into the political strategist arena, that he'll make statements to rile people up, and then he'll back away from statements. And they don't like that. You wouldn't want a president doing something like that.
Yeah.
You have to be a little more careful about the way you go about things. But.
Well, being deliberately provocative is never a good thing for a president.
Right.
So, yeah.
Working for him, it didn't go.
If he's going to continue doing that, you know, I can't see anybody voting for him. But
and so do you think he wants to be president? Sometimes I see these guys and I'm like I don't think they really want that job.
I think they're using Donald Trump.
He's a Donald Trump. I think he's using the process and the energy that's part of the conservative movement now to further himself as a figure.
I think to sell books, I guess. Right. I mean, I don't know what else.
Sell
he's got
books
going on.
Or a position for a cabinet. Role in the actual president's cabinet.
He's like kind of making
maybe he wants to be VP.
I heard that's going to be Condoleezza Rice.
You heard that?
It could be.
Who'd you hear that from?
It was a headline somewhere. You know, just all right, more speculation.
So make your predictions now. Who wins the Iowa caucus?
Oh, the Iowa caucus.
2 weeks, right?
Ron Paul.
All right. I've heard he's possible. I think he'll finish in the top three. I'm not sure he's going to win, but I think
I'll say Ron Paul.
Really?
Say Ron Paul.
Oh, okay. Great!
Wow.
But that doesn't mean anything. Who won in 2008? Huckabee. Now he's got a Fox show.
Yeah, you're right. In the end, it really doesn't mean anything, but. It would give him some momentum going into what's next, South Carolina?
There's North New Hampshire.
New Hampshire and then South Carolina. So, yeah, I mean, it'd certainly be good for him.
I think Romney wins in New Hampshire. Then you got South Carolina. It might take a hit. Romney wins in Florida next or something. Old people like Romney. He's very handsome.
Handsome young man.
Oh, Willard. So cute.
And I think Romney runs away with it, and Republicans across the land weep.
I don't know if this will get into the listener feedback, but one of our new listeners was talking about Ron Paul and said, yeah, I like some of his ideas, but the whole getting rid of the Fed thing scares me. And I'm saying, well, are you kidding? That's his best idea.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, it's his core idea. It all starts from there.
I don't know why that would scare you.
Yeah, I don't either. Unless you're afraid of success, well, prosperity.
I mean, you really, the only scary aspect of that would be getting rid of them without going back onto a gold standard at the same time. If you didn't do that, then I can see it being a little scary because, you know, you're going to wind up with what? All the states end up, you know, printing their own currency again or something, you know.
I want a Missouri buck.
I don't think that's out of the question, but... I just think that, you know, going back on the gold standard would make everything else a little less scary.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, hyperinflation, and you wouldn't have to worry about...
But this brings me to the next topic, which is the topic of naivete has come up in my mind. And I used to think that the old donkey Democrats were just like experts at the naivete, you know. All we just need is the right government program. We'll fix everything. Right. Rainbows, unicorns, stars sprinkling about.
Careful, you're going to alienate your base.
Like, I thought we had the monopoly on naive thinking that a certain candidate, you know, just the right candidate, and boy, we'll get this Democratic Congress and sunshine will rain upon the world. But of course it never works out, and you know, then there's dashed hopes and whatever else. But do we really think, like say we think Ron Paul would get a presidency, say he even got 60 Senate Republican votes. Like, you think he'd really abolish the Fed? You think it really happened?
No, I think he'd get shot just like Lincoln and Kennedy did. And they were both going to do the same.
And we have our first conspiracy theory.
That's not it.
How long did we make
don't
it?
Don't publish that. About,
we made it 32.5 minutes.
All right.
Just never a conspiracy.
Drinking any beer? That's what
I don't have a. Nobody got me a glass. Rob, you're the one who's supposed to provide. Right. You're the social program person here.
Every person
has a glass.
It takes a village to drink beer.
Every chicken in a pot. Every beer in a glass.
Where were we?
We were.
Oh, it's not going to happen, team. It's not going to happen.
It needs to happen, though. It needs to happen.
It needs to happen, but I think when Rick Perry's trying to figure out which agencies he's trying to abolish, the message he's sending is that he doesn't like those agencies. If you think when he's going to be president in 4 years, even if he had a full Congress, that there's suddenly no Department of Energy, you guys are crazy.
Well,
naive and rainbows.
The only reason I think it might be possible is because we're actually talking about the Fed in terms of, you know, bad things that they've done.
Right.
Your average person on the street doesn't even know what the Federal Reserve is or what they do.
Right.
They think they're part of the federal government.
Right. But they're no more federal than, you know, FedEx. And I think that, you know, they... Well, just the stories recently about the $7 trillion that the Fed has loaned to, you know, Eurobanks and God knows who else they've given cash to, you know.
They won't
and they're just printing that stuff out of thin air. It's not causing inflation here because they're giving it away to other places, but the fact that those kinds of stories are in the news and people are talking about the Fed in a negative light lends some credence, not a lot, but some, to this whole crusade of getting rid of them. Prior to this, I mean, Alan Greenspan was a god. Nobody ever questioned a word the man said, you know? It was like...
Right.
So...
Because he was like the wise...
And, you know, Bernanke doesn't strike me as being completely competent at his job. So, you know, if you combine that with the fact that, you know, they're making these somewhat questionable loans through the discount window, which, you know, where is that? I want to get my money out of the discount window.
Well,
you got to get elected.
I mean, if you really think about it, I wish there was some way where we can unify this idea of you got your Occupy Wall Streets and your kind of Tea Party and the Feds people, and people feel like something is out of whack, and if you're Occupy Wall Street, it's out of whack because of some elite Wall Street bankers tugging the strings a little bit. And if you're a Tea Party person, you think it's the Fed and the president or whoever, you know, the Democrats, whoever is your demon. But really, you're starting to get a little bit of a majority there when you start to talk about things aren't working like they should as far as value and markets and jobs and what the value of work is and all those things. Somebody could come in there and actually congeal those two messages, even though the media or how we like to think of things, we think of them as polar opposites, but really all you got to do is link that line into a circle and they're really not too different. Just like all conspiracy theories are kind of the same, right, Jeremy?
Yeah, but here I go again on a conspiracy theory.
If not chemtrails.
No.
Okay, good.
They've been spraying us for years. Go look up chemtrails on Wikipedia.
I'll put it in the show notes.
No. But if this something like Rob's talking about here does start gaining traction, you think there wouldn't be some media influence to counter that? Come on, Rob. Quit laughing and texting and...
I'm texting for our show ideas. No! No, the media's stupid.
You're saying there's no agenda in the media. And there's not an ability for somebody with some money or influence to chart that agenda or chart that course.
No, yeah, I think the media is more stupid than they are liberal. I think they're liberal, but they're way more
diverse. The pro-Fed or the anti-Fed?
Pro-Fed. If Rob's idea that, well, we just need to, you know, these couple of parties and a few people behind
the...
Sam Adams?
Yeah.
Okay.
Please.
And a few people behind this message, if we just tie those together, well, that gets tied together, and so there's rising sentiment against the Fed. suddenly you're going to start seeing more things pro-Fed.
They got $7 million to bop around, and $7 million talks.
Yeah, and it's when you're a lot more than $7 million. It's how many trillion? Seven trillion.
That's and a lot of when trillions.
You missed it by two orders of magnitude.
When people talk about the Fed, they say, well, you know, they're not that bad because they're legally they're capped at how much profit they can make. Well, yeah, but they're still loaning us money out of thin air. Even if they make no profit on that money, it's still money that they created out of thin air that we now have to give back to them,
right,
as a country. So why not, you know, why not make that money out of thin air so we don't owe it to anybody but
Right, as long as we're creating money, we might as well make everybody in America a millionaire.
I could create myself a minivan. That's quite a conspiracy theory.
It's not, though, really. I mean, look at gold. Look at the price of gold. I mean, we're up to $1,700, $1,800 an ounce. For gold.
Ooh.
And it's the highest it's ever been in history. After the hostage crisis in Iran in 1979, gold went up to like $700, $800 an ounce. And that was just unprecedented.
Right.
You know, it'd never been that high. And it went back down to its, quote, normal range in like 2001, somewhere around there. And since then, it's just been this, you know, 45-degree angle all the way up to where it is now. And to me, that says there are plenty of people out there who are nervous about the world's economy, not just the U.S., but the entire world.
So you think we're just getting wise, as we were talking the last episode about kind of an enlightenment of the mind? You think we're just getting our human minds and our communication is getting wise to the lie that money is?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure I would call it wise. Well, I think people are getting worried, but
we're starting to figure out that the illusion of worth or money or I have this green rectangle in my pocket and I can make it rain is, you know. Why can't I just print out a green rectangle in my copier and make it rain? You know, that there's no value of money that...
Because the copier embeds little yellow dots that...
Oh, that would do it.
Sorry, another conspiracy theory. Actually, that's not a conspiracy. That's true, but...
Tell us about yellow dots. You can't
tease. You guys didn't know this?
What do you know about any color
printer, it prints a series of yellow dots on the paper.
Okay.
So that, and it has the printer's serial number, and I don't know what other information is encoded in those dots, but that way if you pass a counterfeit note that you printed on a colored printer, they can trace it back to whoever bought the printer.
So that's why I never register my warranties. All right. I did not know that.
That's a conspiracy
now
theory.
You know.
I've seen it when my ink cartridge starts to go out. I've seen yellow dots, but I never...
It says
Jeremy Minter.
it's on every page you print.
I don't believe you. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to believe me. Look it up.
Can't I just cut out my green rectangles off the bottom of the page so the yellow dots aren't on there? Seems a little bit. Does it?
Not seeing it.
Does it have a little image processing algorithm that says this looks like Lincoln's head? Are you trying to print money? Ask you a little pop-up comes up. It appears
with
as
the
if you're
right.
It appears as if you're trying to counterfeit. Would you like me to embed yellow dots?
Yeah. Here's the number to the Federal Reserve Bank.
Call them, they can help.
All right.
I don't remember where we were.
No, I don't either.
Okay.
Anyway, Republicans are gonna be junk.
I tell you. Oh, we were talking about why if people are wise, and I don't think people are wise.
I think people are getting wise to the fact that money is an illusion.
Yes.
But it always has been throughout human history.
No, not throughout human history.
People didn't trade little rocks and go, ooh, that
just
turquoise is shiny.
Two milestones there. One was Roosevelt confiscating gold, making the private ownership of gold illegal. during the Depression. That was the first milestone. Second was Bretton Woods and Nixon going off the gold standard. Since then, I think that was 1970. Since 1970, money has been an illusion.
But what about before? But
prior to that, money was real.
What about before America? I know it's hard to believe that there was a time before then God shined his light and created our nation.
But 45 years ago?
But there was commerce before there was, boy, I'm cold, I want that beaver pelt. I mean, there was currency.
Yeah, but very rarely was it paper currency. It was usually coinage, and the coin had intrinsic value.
Because it was hard to get that stuff to make the coin.
Right.
It was a little blob of hard to find stuff.
Right.
Hence all the painting for gold and prospecting. I'd be awesome at that.
I mean, that's why coins have ridges around the edge. Some coins, not all of them, but some coins had ridges that prevented people from shaving the metal off of the edge of the coin. And if you did that to enough coins, eventually you'd save up enough you could melt it down and make another coin.
I'm still doing that.
Well, okay.
Better put ridges in the edge, though.
That zinc and copper is not going to get you a whole lot.
Zinc.
No, I'm talking with coins that are still made.
Right.
You know.
But we're past metals. That. We're past that as a people, and now we don't know what the heck to do with ourselves.
Well, it was a mistake. We need to go back to that.
To hard to find stuff?
Yeah. Gold and silver.
That's so...
It's so... constitutional.
It's so primitive.
Why is it any different from what we do now?
It's just as much of an illusion, but it's like you can hold on to it and go, ooh, this gold is heavy and squishy.
Well, it's an illusion, bud. I mean, human beings like shiny things. And that particular shiny thing is scarce, so it has value.
You think electronic banking has furthered the idea of money not having value? You don't get a paycheck anymore. You don't have that in your hands. You don't go to the bank. You pay your bills, hit a button.
Right. I don't know that the electronic banking has had that effect. I mean, I think, you know, from a purely economics standpoint, I think just going to paper currency had that effect. The electronic banking is just a logical extension of that. I don't know that.
I don't totally agree.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, you think people's perception of their money has changed?
Yeah, I do. I do. And even paying with credit cards.
Yeah.
It's changed the perception of.
Right.
You're not handing. Credit card, you give it to them, you get your stuff, and the card comes back and it's back in your pocket.
Right.
Like, you just got all this free stuff. It was awesome.
Okay. Thanks.
With money, you're physically giving something away. You have less of it than you had when you walked in. So there's an emotional, you said humans like shiny things. It's emotional. I mean, people are very emotional about money.
Yeah. I can see that. What do you guys think about Bitcoin?
About what?
Bitcoin. Tell us about Bitcoin.
Well, it's an electronic currency. It's purely electronic. And it's not counterfeitable.
Why not?
What is it?
I don't understand the encryption algorithms behind it, but it's a...
Who does can manipulate it.
Well, no, apparently not. The way it was designed is it takes a computer a very long time to figure out these cryptographic puzzles. And once you've figured it out, then you've, quote, mined a Bitcoin. And, you know, that's how you... And the way the system is set up, it's a peer-to-peer network of money. And there's only a physical limit. I think it's 21 million Bitcoins. And once they've all been mined, that's it. There will be no more. So you won't be able to counterfeit them.
So how does it...
How am I going to buy me a Slim Jim?
Well, they've been struggling to get a way to, like, you know, make it make it easy for use in commerce.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some vendors that, you know, accept it as payment, but...
What is it worth? Like, one Bitcoin is worth $20?
It fluctuates. I mean, it's just like any other currency, you know. Okay. When it first came out, it was like a couple of cents, you know. But back in 2009 and early 2010, it was up to, like, you know, one Bitcoin was worth $72. And so if you had...
I want one of those.
If you had mined your own little collection of Bitcoins, you could cash them in at that point, and, you know... I can't believe you guys haven't heard about this. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Is it us or is it you that you... Are we odd that we haven't heard of Bitcoin?
I think you read this in Dan Brown's last book, The Da Vinci Code, or
whatever. The thing about it is, it's completely anonymous, untraceable currency. You know, unlike the electronic...
Money printed on yellow dotted paper.
Right.
It does, to bring it back to the other topic, it does highlight the issue that why is a Bitcoin any more of a valuable or less of a valuable currency than a piece of copper zinc with,
well,
you know, washing
just,
its head on it?
It's because it's a scarce thing. I mean, there are only so many of them.
But not nickels. And I can make a nickel,
Can't, and you can't just create them spontaneously. There's a, you know, there's a process for making
right.
them.
Right. Which is the same as the Fed and their treasury, right? Making a process for building.
As long as there's rag paper, you can continue to print money indefinitely.
Right.
It's
but it
like,
does, it does, it does raise the, it's, if someone would scoff, like Jeremy made a scoffing type face at Bitcoin,
before
I mean, it,
we
it raises the question of how is it any less
well, before
real
we
than
went
my
off the gold standard, every dollar could be redeemed for a dollar's worth of gold.
Right.
And there was only so much gold.
Right.
You know, we only mine so much every year, and I remember reading once that, you know, all the gold that's ever been mined in human history would be a cube like the size of a stadium or something. It's
like an 8-story building or something. Yeah, it wasn't much.
It's not a lot of gold.
I like to think, I think it's the beer talking a little bit. But you remember in 1849, those are good times.
Yeah.
When we would pan for nuggets.
Yeah.
Like, we've stopped panning, right? Nobody's panning for nuggets anymore. But we're panning the financial system for little electronic bitcoins. We're panning for changes in regulation or European markets or commodities or whatever. That's the panning we're doing. We're not panning for value or scarcity. We're panning for playing games with regulations.
The panning has been commercialized.
How so? What do you mean?
There's still... People aren't doing it on just so I can... I need to buy a new TV, so I'm going to go... I think there might be gold here, so I'm going to go pan for a few hours. And that's not happening anymore, but you still have industry that mines gold and tries to find sources of gold.
You're talking about real gold.
Yeah.
I'm talking about metaphorical gold. I'm saying that someone's figured out...
That's right, metaphorical gold.
that we figured out that it's not worth sitting in a stream and panning around and shaking your prospector cane at people on your yard. I don't know. Is that how prospecting works?
I wasn't there. I don't know.
I'm not saying that that's what's going on, but you have a value. Why did people prospect for gold? You had a value system, which was crazy, and you went to go look for rare elements to get you ahead to basically generate value out of nothing, out of rock, right?
Well,
isn't that the same thing we're doing now? We're trying to generate value out of nothing. We're trying to generate value out of bundling home loans or selling debt to Germany or whatever it is.
I agree with you that that's nothing. But panning for gold is not nothing. I mean, you have to work really hard.
But you have to turn a rock
for gold.
Right.
So you're exchanging your labor for, you know, the money you get.
What if we get alchemy back, where you can just make? Those days were good. You can make the gold,
get it back.
Those are good.
There's rubble still skin we need.
They just didn't try hard enough.
Okay.
Well,
this is kind of silly to try to look for an element.
If you're gonna. talk about metaphorical panning for gold.
Let's hear it.
My opinion is that we've become consumers. Because the consumerism is now how we pan for gold. Like Black Friday.
Yeah.
People, they're going to get a deal like nobody else has discovered before. So right. They go, that's the modern version of panning for gold.
That's sad.
It is sad. But
That we've put our nationwide like gusto into finding the Tickle Me Elmo for a couple bucks less.
That's the most, and like I said, that's the consumerist side of it. Now the producer side of it is maybe investing. You know, I got a hot tip on a stock, so I'm gonna put my effort there. But it's not the same as exchanging physical labor for trying.
Why don't we just make awesome stuff? I want to make awesome stuff again. Let's just make something awesome. But there's no money in making something awesome. You got to make crap and make a better margin on it. Or sell it on Black Friday with the right advertising at the right time at the right price point, and that makes you your millions. You don't have to make anything good. It's awful. I'm getting depressed now. Is it the beer?
That's the beer. Hit the tipping point.
It's a whiskey talking.
Where's my hover car?
All right, well, I want to move on to another big story of 2011. Is it May 1st, I think?
When Bin Laden was killed? It was May 2nd here, I think.
Yeah, you may be right.
It was right around midnight. It's hard to tell.
It was May 1st.
Tough day for Mr. O.
Yeah, I guess I was appalled at the reaction generally here in the United States when that happened.
How so? You mean the cheering, people out in the streets?
That there were people out partying and, you know, dancing in the streets over the death of this individual. And I'm not saying that, you know, I don't get to judge whether or not he deserved to die. That's not my role. I don't believe that's anybody's role. Yeah, we were critical of the reactions in some cities in the Middle East when 9/11 occurred. There was that same celebratory environment, you know, they were dancing in the streets and, you know, generally happy that the U.S. had suffered such a devastating blow. And then we turn around and do the same thing to them when Osama bin Laden was killed. And, you know, I'm not sure that he was killed under the most honorable circumstances anyway. And then we went and buried him at sea, which seems like a complete cop-out to me. I don't know. The whole thing just really stunk. And obviously we haven't talked about it on this show before because it happened way before we started, but that was one thing I wanted to discuss.
Well, I had a similar reaction when I first saw the people, I think some of them were outside the White House, you know, on the fence line, the American
DC,
flag. And
New York, Pennsylvania, those were the hot spots.
I was talking to my brother-in-law about it, and he said, well, you know, look at some of these people. This is all they've known, the war on terror.
Right.
They were 10 years old when this happened.
Right.
And we've been fighting this battle for so long, and this is the first major tangible victory.
Sure. Right.
And it was almost a sense like, yeah, you know, we've been getting kicked around for a while from the impact that attack had on the United States and our mindset, and this was the first real victory, and so we are still capable of doing something.
I think it was real.
It's kind of like VJ Day.
It was a real ace thing. That's the key thing that I would mention here is that like, so I don't remember how old I was. I think I was probably like 27. So when 9/11 happened, awful, of course, but not world changing to me. Like, I knew that there was.
Then?
I think so.
It was 10 years ago.
I'm an old man. And I
was 32.
Well, there you go. I knew you were 30, old. I didn't realize.
33.
So we're kind of aware of terrorism in the world and the awful things that can happen, and, you know, obviously shocking, but not like a world changer for us. We're like, oh, all right, so this is the way the world works. Not too surprising. If you were 2 at the time, you know, you don't remember what was going on, so you're 12 and you're like, this is crazy.
you compare it to.
But if you're 12 at that time, and now you're 22, you can drink a little beer. Big fan of beer. It turns out tonight. You know, if you're 12 and 9/11 happens, you understand how countries work. You understand how airplanes work. You've been in a skyscraper. You can grasp that full impact of what that event meant, while still having that childish kind of, you know, out of control feeling about that. So now you're 22, and this happens. You've like beat your boogeyman, you know. Whereas if you're 50 at that time, and now you're 60, well, you're not going to go. You know,
well, that's true. It certainly wasn't the older generation that was out there partying.
Right.
Yeah.
But it did. You know, it did portray us in a kind of a rah-rah light that wasn't too good. It wasn't too sad. But,
well, I just think that if we're concerned about, you know, blowback, making it easier to recruit the next generation of terrorists that are going to perpetuate this whole war on terror against us.
That reaction was probably one more thing in a long list of reasons why they're doing awesome at recruiting.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're part of the Blame America crowd.
No, I would not say that.
Well, I am, honestly, because, I mean, I agree with Ron Paul in this respect that, you know, 9/11 was largely our fault. Maybe not 100%, but it was largely our fault. We were doing things that, you know, were just poking the hornet's nest, and, you know, so... We got what was coming to us to some degree. And I'm not saying it was right.
Yeah,
I'm not justifying it in any way. I'm just saying that we were not blameless.
We've discussed that before.
We have?
Back, on episode 11.
I don't
episode
remember.
11.
Look at this guy.
Yeah.
And I do agree with some of that, but I still have a lot of trouble with saying, that it was our fault.
I wouldn't go so far as that it was our fault, but we can't be surprised. Like when we use our might to just to do pretty much whatever we want around the world, and we're not asking for a fair fight against people who disagree with us. Saying, all right, well, let's match militaries and let's battle on the battlefield because we're going to stomp you. You know, we're not asking for a fair fight. So when they come up and sucker punch us right in the gut, you know, we can't be surprised. We can't be like, oh, shocking. You know, that's the game we've chosen to play. You know, it's like the Israelis and the Palestinians when they're rolling F-16s and tanks through the streets. You know, you can't be upset when a car bomb goes off. You know, well, what do you expect? You know,
yeah.
You know, what do you expect them to go make their own little jet?
Well, I think that the average Joe out there is ignorant to the history involved, and so they have a hard time putting the 9/11 attacks in their proper context. You know, it's just like it happened out of the blue.
Right.
You know, there was nothing. There was nothing leading up to it. It was just, you know, one day they decided to attack us because they hated our freedoms.
They wanted to take our freedoms away.
Whatever it was, but you know, go back to 1953 when the CIA overthrew the Shah in Iran. Okay, that starts this timeline of us meddling in the Middle East. You know, actually, you could probably go back farther than that if you wanted to involve, you know, Israel and that whole situation. But just Iran, look at that, and then, you know, then the hostage crisis in 79 and 80 doesn't seem so out of place because you've already got a generation of people who grew up knowing that the U.S. had been meddling in Iranian politics.
Right.
And that generation are the ones that perpetrated that whole hostage crisis.
Right.
That has continued to this day. I mean, there's plenty of people in the government in Iran. And I won't say that the average Iranian on the street really cares that much about the U.S. or hates us. Or, you know, I don't think that's true. I think the people in power there like to play that up, though.
Right, sure.
And they can point back to all these things in the past. And... then couple that with, I don't know if you guys ever seen Charlie Wilson's World.
Yeah, that is a great movie.
You watch that movie, I mean, you come away with it realizing that Ronald Reagan created Osama bin Laden. I mean, he didn't exist before that. And so, you know, then you know, look at the photos of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein. You know, back when we were allies, when we were selling them arms so that they could fight the Iranians in the 80s. And it's just, you know, it's one thing after another. We've just been playing both sides or three different sides of every fence that, you know, we come across. And that is not respected in their culture.
Right.
You know,
right.
They would actually respect us if we would pick a side and say, all right, you guys are evil.
Right.
We are good. And, you know. But that's not how we play it.
No.
You know? It's like one year we're good, you're evil. The next year we're good, somebody else is evil.
And we're playing it for the money, which is why they attack the money center.
So
it's money back with
military
power.
That's why I say we're not blameless, because we, you know, we've left that impression on the world that the enemy of my enemy is not necessarily my friend, but that's the way we played it in the past.
We're not alone in playing that game, though.
Absolutely not. No, you're right.
But we seem to be taken to task more playing that game. Well, maybe we're not very good at playing that game.
Well, we're just the biggest player.
Yeah.
And we're the big kid on the block.
For some reason, we've been, you know, saddled with this mantle of the policeman for the world, which I've never agreed with. I mean, even the years I spent in the military, I never agreed with that. I didn't understand why us? Why, you know?
I think some of it has to do with our humanitarian side. That might sound odd.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Russia doesn't care if their own people die, let alone some other countries, but, you know, the United States, the bleeding heart, these poor people.
Yeah, don't you? Sometimes don't you think it'd be nice to be China, you know?
No. Right. Like, I've never.
No, I mean, China is a person, if every nation was a person.
Right.
Like, when they're like, we need oil, where should we get it from, you know? Do you think they're looking at
Rob's house?
Yeah, you think they're going to look at Africa's human rights record?
Right.
You know, they're
have
like,
no concern
I don't know.
For human rights whatsoever.
Right.
But, well, maybe that just happens when you have a billion people in your country.
Right, right.
I mean, maybe we'll get there someday where we have a billion people and we're just like, you know what? We can't afford to respect human rights anymore. There's too many humans.
We'll just diminish all their rights together and then.
I don't know, but I do know that, you know, that's part of the problem with our economy right now, is that China is basically exploiting slave labor over there, which we're not allowed to do anymore here, so we have to compete with a country that, you know, can produce stuff at a tenth the cost that we do.
Right.
This is not along those lines, but a few points I wrote down about Osama bin Laden and finally killing him.
Sure, put us back on track here.
Okay, so we lost the helicopter, the stealth Black Hawk.
Right, right.
That was big in the news, and they were saying, you know, here, we lost this awesome technology. But that's operational risk. I mean, you have to, I would assume, I wasn't in the military, Jerry, but what I do know, working with it somewhat, I'm sure every operation has a risk assessment where you say, well, we need, for this to be successful, we're going to have to use this weapon.
Yeah.
We need to, this system, delivery system, whatever it is, and the risk of mission success versus losing that technology has to be evaluated.
Right.
I would assume. And
that
and
I would
was
say
important
somebody,
enough that
somebody at the Pentagon did that cost-benefit analysis and said, yeah, this is good. If we get Osama, we'll risk losing the.
And no doubt, China and Russia have now seen this and are evaluating every aspect of it that they can. And, you know, maybe they may have known about this before, and it's not a secret to them. It was a secret to the public, but they know more than we do as the public.
Sure.
For their inner circles.
Yeah, so, the SR-71 was a secret for decades before the public knew about it, but I'm sure Russia and whatever else we were surveilling knew about it for a long time. Yeah.
The other thing, well, let's see, I'm not sure the best flow here, but losing technology, so Iran has this drone now that they claim to have hacked and landed safely. And
wait, what? Describe. Describe for our listeners and me.
You haven't seen the pictures of the drone, the spy drone?
No.
What's it called? RG-71?
170, I thought. RQ.
RQ, yeah.
One of our drones?
Yeah, yeah, it's a surveillance drone, unarmed, theoretically, I think they've said. But so it's intact. It wasn't shot down.
And it was 150 kilometers inside Iran's border when it was...
Oh. Their eastern border, so operated out of Afghanistan.
And they discovered and such a thing.
They claim to have hacked a signal and essentially landed it.
Took control of it and landed it.
Hot.
And now they're saying, I saw an article that said, well, we're almost finished decoding the drone. You know, it sounds like a very generic, yep, we got everything.
We're going to work the computer-y stuff on it.
That's how it was. So it was kind of funny to me. But again, so about a day or, let's see, it was probably about 5 days after that, a Predator crashed on landing at one of the bases, I think Diego Garcia or something like that. And so the headline was, we lost another one. Well, I mean, I thought it was funny that if they really knew how many of these drones we've lost, these things are meant to be somewhat expendable. Yeah, they're expensive, so you can't lose them all, but that's the point of these drones. They're high-risk missions, they're long-endurance missions, so they're meant to be somewhat expendable.
Not to mention the fact that the guys piloting them, most of them are Tampa.
Tampa, Nellis, they're in a Nellis. Or,
it's a football game.
So, I mean, it's not like they're even local.
I thought that headline was funny. Oh, no, we lost another one.
Yeah, oh, two. Another one, oh, too.
But back to the bin Laden thing. Do you think disclosing that he had been killed was a major intelligence gaffe by the administration, or was it necessary that they disclose that?
Oh, you think because they should have killed him and not said
anything? They should have not said anything, because they got this whole treasure trove of information, CDs and whatever else from his...
Why was there that awesome helicopter all crashed up in that compound?
Oh, they could have come up with some cover story for that. They wouldn't have had to reveal this, but
may not have made it here. But the
we tried to get him, and he's still out there. You are good at the conspiracy.
No, and this isn't a conspiracy. This is asking the question that.
Well, why would they? Why would they want to? Why would they not want
to? It's the Obama administration, right? They had to have a victory.
I don't understand why they
wouldn't know that that would have been any different with a different administration. But
December 13th, 2003, we caught Saddam Hussein in a hole hiding, right?
Right. Oh, it'll be banned.
That's
about
the reason George Bush was reelected.
Talk about 2012.
You can talk about all the other stuff, but the reason he was reelected in 2004 was because he got Saddam.
Well, and to bring it back to the year in review, the Republicans are going to bring up the classic line: Democrats are weak on defense because they want to cut budgets or whatever. And Obama's got that. He's got the ace of spades or whatever it is in his pocket. Say, like, let's talk about all the drone attacks. Let's talk about getting those, and then talk to me about weak on defense.
I'm not saying never.
So, but I don't understand what the benefit would be to not.
The benefit would be you wait as long as you can. Say, if it's only 4 or 5 days. All that, if they captured phone numbers, then they could monitor those lines. Maybe they didn't know about some of them. Well, now as soon as they tell that, all that's gone.
Right.
Those guys chucked those.
Right.
And so you've lost all kinds of potential leads.
It's kind of like when you captured the Enigma machine in World War II.
Yeah, you don't tell anybody you had it.
Right.
Yeah, I see your point.
And no, I didn't create that point. I mean, I heard minor discussions on that.
We're going to take a little break while Rob visits the little boy's room. We'll be right back. Rudolph, you ain't no reindeer. Okay, we're back. Rob's back.
I'm back. Feeling better.
I had one last thing on the Bin Laden.
Sure, go ahead.
Pakistan's outrage, was that real or was that manufactured for their own benefit? Their outrage that we didn't disclose, you know, warn them that we're going in.
I think they're playing both sides of that fence.
I think so, and that's why I'm asking, because I think there's a lot that goes on. Like, okay, well, we're going to say this out loud, and you guys know we don't really mean this.
Right, so right.
Not that any of us would have any knowledge.
How much of that is just posturing, and how much of it is real, you know, diplomatic communications between the two countries?
Well,
it's like the Cuban Missile Crisis all over again, right?
But how the WikiLeaks thing brings some of that to light, that, you know, governments are saying, well, okay, we're going to say this publicly, but this is how we...
Right, back channels.
Back channels, this is what's really going on. We're going to support you doing this.
Yeah.
Huh. So, any opinions on Pakistan?
From everything I've read about the ISI, they are playing both sides. So, that is happening.
Yeah.
The U.S. has to tolerate a certain amount of that in order to claim Pakistan as an ally in the war on terror.
Yes.
You know, we can't just throw them under the bus. So, I mean, it's complicated. It's the foreign entanglements that Washington warned us about when he left office.
That's
right?
What my Facebook page says, my political views. We should have listened to Washington.
What did they gain by harboring the guy? Like, do you think that the Pakistani officials in charge set up a little compound, turned a blind eye?
Somebody somewhere knew it. I cannot believe that they were completely ignorant of the fact that he was there.
But why? What does that get them?
It's a good question.
You got them something. Otherwise, they wouldn't have just let it chill.
Well,
does it help them out with the Kashmir region? I mean, does this all go back to their own ambitions?
There are tribal aspects here that we don't understand because it's not part of our culture.
Right.
I mean, and that rules that entire region, not just Pakistan, Afghanistan. I mean, the entire, you know, that whole region of Asia is all about tribes, you know, and their loyalty to their tribe is absolute. So, I don't know, have you guys ever seen The Beast? Movie,
no.
The Beast.
Nope.
It's worth watching. It's about the war the Russians fought in Afghanistan, you know, and the Beast is the tank, the iconic Russian tank that, you know, kind of led that whole war. I think he needs a glass.
Yeah, a glass, please.
Thank you.
Okay, and what happens with the tank? I may have seen that, now that you talk about it.
Ken actually turned me on to that movie. I hadn't heard of it until he told me about it, but it's worth watching. But it kind of underscores the whole tribal aspect of certainly Afghanistan and the surrounding region. And so, you know, who knows that Bin Laden isn't from that region.
Right. Saudi Arabia.
But he may have befriended multiple people in a certain tribe, and that tribe had ties to somebody in the Pakistani government. So, you know, their loyalty to them took precedence over any kind of...
Certainly over America.
Well, yeah, that's easy a given.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, over any appearance of impropriety, you know, in the government. And our government is certainly not a model of virtue.
We don't have tribes, we have
Rob
parties.
Rob is clutching
so.
His pearls. But, you know, I think the corruption in Pakistan and some other countries is probably an order of magnitude worse than what we've experienced here. So, I guess what I'm saying is, who knows what the connection is. There may have been some political benefit to harboring him, you know. I don't know.
But hey, Obama went in there and rained the pain, right? With a crazy-looking helicopter.
Yeah.
Right? Give him some props.
Right. Yeah.
I do love that picture. I gotta say, as an Obama man, in that picture,
in the situation,
the situation.
Oh yeah.
I think the look on his face.
The photo that launched 1,000 memes on the internet.
That's right. But that I think the look on his face is exactly the look I would want on a president's face in that moment.
I would agree with that because it's kind of a mixture of satisfaction and horror.
Right, 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 and worry and right and satisfaction and panic and all that stuff. Like, I don't think he's doing a victory lap there, and I think he understands what's going on. I mean,
hey, you think the celebrating in the streets? Do you think that was? I think that was to a larger extent because it was a Navy SEAL operation and not a missile strike. I think that had anything to do with the exuberance and like, yeah, we're badass. We
yeah, probably
freaking
did.
Guys went in there and took his ass out.
Yeah, but you know, what did that entail? Because from everything I've read, he wasn't armed. He was, you know, dressed in his pajamas basically, and I don't know. That's my biggest issue.
He was
with the whole thing,
but he wasn't in the house alone. I mean, there was a
true. But sure, there was. I mean, ultimately, there was a guy standing there with a gun, draws a bead on Bin Laden. He's got to choose whether or not he's going to kill him in cold blood or not, and the choice was made. I'm not sure that that's the choice that should have been made.
What would have happened if he didn't make it?
Well, they
would have brought him bring him back.
They would have brought him back for a trial, and
that would not go well.
No, it wouldn't have. I agree, but I'm not sure that this went well either.
Well,
I don't know that
it can go well. But
you think morally, it's just not the right choice. It's politically and tactically, maybe the right choice.
Well, in a country that, you know, pays such lip service to the rule of law, and you know,
but that's where it is. It's lip service, and it's.
But it's really hard then to justify an act like that, and still say that you're, you know,
right,
that you're supporting the rule of law. Because what law exactly was in play there? What, you know,
right? How are we any different than anything else?
Like kill this guy and throw him in the ocean, you know. And then, oh, by the way, 3 or 4 months later, we do the same thing with a, you know, a drone strike on, what's Al-Awlaki? What the hell is this? I can't remember now.
Al-Zakari?
No. Oh, the American.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to bug me. What was his name?
So informed, the podcast participants.
I can't read now.
Anyway, you know, it was in conjunction with that story that we learned that, you know, the government has a list of, you know, people that they're gunning for, that, you know, they're trying to kill. And really? I mean, America's supposed to be a free society. Obama's administration was supposed to be so much more transparent than all the previous ones. And yet we have this secret list of people that we're trying to kill.
Well, we've all made one of those lists, haven't we, Jerry?
I'll admit it, I have a list, yes. But I don't actually act upon my list.
Well, maybe we can hack a drone and start taking apart that list.
The DIY project for me this weekend. To build my own drone.
Yeah.
Well, can't say he's weak on defense. Is Obama weak on defense?
Well, and I think that, like I said before, I think that's the largest reason that this was made public the way it was, because there was that impression, and he's trying to combat that impression.
You think he did more than anybody else would have done? If W was in there, you think he did more than Georgie would have with his mission accomplished?
There was
with a little Roman numeral 2 right after it?
Right after it happened, there was a graphic going around on the internet. You guys might have seen it with Obama wearing a cowboy hat. I don't know what photo op that was from, but somebody had, you know, written in the words below it, here's my birth certificate, and here's Osama bin Laden. Is there anything else I can get you, motherfuckers?
I just saw that within the last week. It's actually pretty funny.
day of a full year.
So, you know, there's somebody in his staff there in the White House who's thinking along those same lines.
It's like, right. But I don't think he did any more than any other president would have. He didn't.
You mean as far as allocating resources?
No, as far as claiming celebratory credit and sparring riots of celebration and claiming a big victory. And
I don't think so. I don't think it was much different from what anybody else would have done.
I don't think you make the weak on defense claim. I think that's over. And I think that claim's going to be made on him, and he's going to slam dunk that thing. Give a little reverse jam right in the hoop when he gets that. Say, like, well, let's just look here, you know. Let's look at the number of
top terrorists killed under my administration.
Well, that's Dennis Miller is a big righty. He didn't like Obama, but he was on Jay Leno, and Leno's lefty and big Obama supporter. And Leno, or Dennis Miller said, Obama, I love this guy. He's freaking killing everybody.
There you go.
He's winning people over.
There you go. So, here in review.
Yes.
We're rambling a little bit.
Yeah.
With all this in light, is Obama a radical leftist? Or is he really a centrist?
Somebody sent me a link a week or so ago to an article talking about when he did his, I don't know if it was his speech in Osawatomie in Kansas, like a week or two ago. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
No.
He gave a speech in Osawatomie, Kansas, which is in the middle of freaking nowhere.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
I've been there. I went there with my wife because her family is from there. And he only did it because Teddy Roosevelt gave a speech in that same town, and he's trying to capture some of that, you know, magic, I guess.
The Teddy Roosevelt rider.
Yeah, yeah. And he's also delivering a similar message because, you know, Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican, kind of. I mean, but right. Really...
But busted trusts up and did all that stuff.
And so I think Obama's trying to, you know, align himself with that message. So that was the symbolism in delivering that speech there. But this link, and I'll try to include it in the show notes, was to somebody's analysis of his speech saying that he basically came out and admitted, hey, I'm a socialist, you know. Which I don't know that he did. I don't know that, you know, that was exactly what he said. That was just this one writer's interpretation of it. But I think it's interesting. That's the first time I've heard somebody just come right out and say that, you know, Obama said, hey, I'm a socialist. I think some of his ideas are socialistic.
Sure. I'll buy that.
I don't know that he is personally a socialist, though.
Right, and I wouldn't say he's always falls on the left side of. I don't think he's I don't think he operates a platform that would be right consistent with a radical left philosophy.
I think he's aligned himself with a party that doesn't allow him to break from that agenda far.
But I think his personal intuition is to break from that. I think
I could see that, yeah.
I think he's disappointed a lot of people on the left with his policies and what he's done and hasn't done.
I think there's a lot of people that have accused him of, you know, cozying up to the same Wall Street types that Bush cozied up to.
Sure.
And that may be his nature. I don't know. I don't know if that's just...
And for me, I'm not surprised at all. In the way I understood the guy when he was up for election, I didn't. And if you read his books or whatever, he doesn't portray himself as the radical left. I'm just saying that as I don't think the charge against him as some kind of like radical off the chart leftist spectrum dude is really holds. I think for every policy that he's taken apart. Taken kind of upon himself.
Yeah.
You could say this is wrong or this is misguided or this shouldn't have worked or whatever it is, I buy all that. But I don't think you can just say he's like some kind of like off the map spectrum leftist.
You need to watch more Fox News.
They'll learn you.
Well, okay, so Jeremy on the Magic Sheet.
One thing I had on my list was the whole Occupy Wall Street thing.
Let's hear it.
That was one of the most significant stories of the year, and it's both interesting and disappointing to me at the same time that they seem to have just completely, you know, packed in their tents and left.
Right.
And I didn't know how they were going to manage to make it through a winter, you know, living in a park in New York City and elsewhere.
Right.
But I was anxious to kind of see how they were going to do that.
Right.
And I'm always intrigued when there's this anti-government sentiment that manifests itself, no matter how it manifests itself. So whether it's the Tea Party or Occupy Wall Street, and I think, you know, we've talked about this before, I think those are two sides of the same coin. I think those folks are, you know, I hate to use the term, disenfranchised. They're disenchanted with their government.
Right.
They all think they have a solution, and they have different approaches of, you know, obtaining that solution. But I think it's just a bigger symptom of the fact that there are so many people that hate the government.
Right.
And hate what it's done, what it represents, what, you know, its failures to, you know, do the things that you expect it to, while at the same time doing things that you don't want it to.
Right,
you know?
right.
So I think that is the motivation here. And that's why I'm kind of sad to see the Occupy Wall Street fading from, you know, the front pages, as it were, because it's...
The key with the Occupy Wall Street wasn't so much the Wall Street, it was the Occupy. You know, when they protested, it was like, oh, look, it's a protest. How nice. Maybe a drum circle, you know. And then it was like, but they're still there. I'm like, why are they still there?
Right.
And the only reason they got traction is because they just stuck around.
Right.
It was like, you
suddenly it was news because they'd been there for 30 days or 60 days.
Right. So while at the 2-week mark it seemed absurd, by the 1-month mark it seemed significant.
Right.
You know, it was the Occupy part.
I still never got a clear message from Occupy Wall Street. That's why it didn't do anything for me.
The only message
is anger.
But you're
not going to get a clear message from the Tea Party either. So
the message is anger and frustration at mystical, powerful forces that are out of the control of the regular people. Whether that's monopolies or whether that's the Obama administration, whatever it is, it's that there's forces that are making the country worse than it should be by their own little puppet string hands. And whether those puppet strings are manipulated by the Obama administration with their liberal agenda or something else.
Here's the connection that I make, and I'll acknowledge that not everyone probably makes the same connection, but Occupy Wall Street here, connect that with the Arab Spring movement in, you know, North Africa and the Middle East, connect it with all of the protests throughout Europe this year for, you know, various
austerity
reasons.
Measures, right?
Yeah, austerity measures and everything that was going on in Europe. Connect it with the protests that are going on right now in Russia over the elections. You know, they're accusing Putin of fraud in those elections. I can't help but look at the whole thing as a global sentiment of discontent with government, period. Whatever form that might take, wherever it lives, all of those people are you know, angry with their respective governments. And
fascinating. I want to have to process that.
You think we're on the brink of an enlightenment of what we were talking about the last episode, but
I'll be the first to acknowledge that it's wishful thinking on my part.
Well,
but,
and you would
tend to
look for
this. But at some point, the evidence becomes overwhelming. I mean, you just can't ignore it anymore, right?
I think it's a... I'll have to really think about this. Yeah, because, I mean, it's... Yeah, there's a possibility that just like we were talking about with the money at the beginning of the episode, right, about the illusion of money, like maybe collectively we're coming to a consciousness that the money's illusion, the government's an illusion, that there's all these things that we've put in place that are no longer, that are not functioning, but also hurting us.
All we need is another Tiananmen Square in China, and that will seal the deal, right?
Seal the deal. I'm not going to be the guy, though. If you guys want to stand up there in front of that tank, just let me know. I'll say I knew you.
Thanks. Bloodhound Gang sings about that guy in a song. I just had to point that out.
The 3-2-1 Contact Bloodhound Gang?
No.
The band. All right.
Okay. About the dude in Tiananmen Square with a six-pack and a folding chair. That's
a good lyric.
Yeah, that's good lyric.
It rhymes.
That's what I always think of.
That's a Christmas time ponderable for me. I'll have to see if I...
Well, how does the movement here get strong enough that guys like us become involved? Because I'm very discontented with the way things are, where they're going, but I still went to work every day. I never took off work to go down to Keener Plaza and
play some drums.
Is that because you're bad at drums?
Yeah, that's part of it.
I have a tent. My demonstrating days are probably behind me. Because, you know, I did that. I marched on Washington. I did not know that. Yeah, I've done that. I've gone to, you know, the Freedom Summit and, you know, all those things.
Was it all for a woman, or were you really...
No.
Okay.
No.
Jerry's an idealist.
No, in fact, I dragged my woman to D.C. When we did the march on the mall.
Isn't it fascinating about the role of youth? I mean, there's another theme through the podcast, trying to bring it all together.
Yeah.
Is the way the generations and things that happen to generations when they're 12 affect things when they're 22, and now they can shoot some guns and throw some rocks. And
right.
Hey, the blue scores.
Tied.
Real time.
Well, Dr. Drew would say yes.
Well, what would Dr. Drew say?
He would say
he's
yes.
He's appearing on the podcast for the first time. Welcome, Dr. Drew.
Things that happen when you're 12, it's a formative age.
Right.
And so those things come back around when you reach adulthood, and they're you're going to act out based on those things.
I would say that's true. When I was 12, we returned to the Iran hostage crisis. You know, that was the year Reagan took office, and
when I turned 12, I got really good at...
Lenin got murdered that year, and it was 1980.
80.
Yeah, I turned 12, I got really good at band, and so I started playing a lot of instruments.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, that's good stuff. What was the negative that happened to you then?
I only bring that up because, you know, that story was significant enough that it punched through into a 12-year-old's, like, psyche, The fact that it went on for 444 days. You know?
Right.
So
right.
It was like, you couldn't avoid talking about it. Everybody was counting the days, you know, and so in my class, I was in, you know, junior high or whatever, my class, we had the countdown on the board, you know.
Right.
It was just one of those stories that everybody was aware of, and...
That's fascinating, though.
It was
that's so fascinating, the generations and the way it plays out. And because when I was a kid, I was every time there was protests about whatever it was, I was like, why is it always college kids? Why is it always the college kids? Like, when are like the AARP guys gonna like go rally and parade? You know,
it's the liberal colleges, man.
It's not. That's not what it is.
Well, they didn't have rascals back then, so the old timers couldn't get out.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really see the 45-year-olds getting all pumped up unless it's the Tea Party.
Well, okay, so
you know what I mean.
On a parallel topic, this was something else that I wanted to bring up. Facebook.
Hate it.
But, it's got its pros and cons.
Sure.
Like anything else. But, you know, there are those that would claim that Facebook could take credit for some of the Arab Spring, you know, because it was used as a tool for rallying all of those people in Tunisia and Egypt, and I don't know about Libya as much, but you know, it certainly played a role in those right. revolutions. And then at the same time, you know, they're violating our privacy here in the United States, and you know,
right.
they're worried about is you know, the almighty dollar.
Sure.
And
they're good American company.
I don't know. What do you guys think? Is on balance, you know, what's the net value of Facebook? Is it positive or negative?
Sucks.
I don't know. Net value to me, it's positive.
Okay.
But
I think.
But that's only because I'm not a Facebook freak. You know, yeah. I'm not playing Farmville and Mafia Wars.
Right.
You're not? Yeah, will you accept my request to play?
I used to get those all the
can
time.
I, will you accept my request to play? My will delete, you accept?
My delete button almost broke.
I think they've harnessed a technology and then a cultural desire to socially connect in it. So, good for them. That's what they've done. And that can help a variety of things. It can help the Arab Spring, and it can help me, like, snoop on my high school hottie that I always wanted to see how she's doing. Not that I would do that.
Who's listening to the podcast?
That's right. We have a lot of listeners. But they've, as far as Facebook in particular, they've done it in the most juvenile 13-year-old way of trying to gain friends. How many friends can you get? Let's post stupid stuff online. They've done it from like the most goofy, uninspiring perspective.
Right.
Like when I try to send them, you guys are my Facebook friends. I'm happy to say, I now have two Facebook friends. but when I try to send
and
you
a profile picture,
I actually unfriended you today. So
you're out. But when I try to send you guys a message, I have no idea how to do it. And it's because Facebook is not meant to be able to send messages. When I try to find friends
yeah.
to send messages,
right.
it points me to friends that aren't my friends.
Yeah.
Because it's a classic American application. It's it is very American.
I think that's a recent change to it. It used to be easier. Now it is a little bit screwy on
the
trying to force you to IM or
the thing about Facebook is when it's free, it probably means that you're the product.
Right, 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 right.
So
you brought up a good point, though, about here it's this goofy thing that geared towards the teenagers, but in countries where social interactions are, they're clamped down a little bit, maybe it's used in a more mature way, in a more reverent way.
Right.
Than America? We're America, baby.
I'm talking.
We do everything the best.
Yeah.
Matt to insert something from Team America here at this point.
Yeah.
No, but the point is,
you're right.
It was
you're right.
Used to incite the Arab Spring in some ways.
Right.
They used it for theoretically something important.
Right.
Not to send fart videos around or whatever they're doing.
How dare they use our
fart
video?
Okay, we have to ask, what's your opinion of Occupy Wall Street?
Okay.
Nothing? No. Just anything.
You got nothing? Come on.
My only opinion is, I think it's great that you want to protest or you want to do whatever, you want to speak your mind, but I think it's pretty ridiculous when you spend months and months and months. At that point, you're not really proving a point, and you just need to move on. That's pretty much
go home, take a bath.
But you know, if they're downtown here.
So you like the Wall Street part, not so much the Occupy part.
I don't think I might Occupy or whatever, but you know, you do your best to make a point, and if it doesn't work, you move on and you try something else.
Okay. But
get out of the way, get out of downtown, wherever that may be, and quit making that city look like crap. It's not helping anything.
You might want to replace me with her as a panelist because she has a much better formed idea than I do.
Good job.
That's it.
Woohoo!
All right. It's our waitress here at JJ Twiggs.
Guest artist.
Pontificating on Occupy Wall Street.
All right.
What else you got, Jeremy?
Oh, just highlights. Arab Spring, Libya. Why did we choose to beat up on Libya, essentially?
I have to say that comes back to Obama trying to beef up his, you know,
I got
we're not going to bomb the Saudis because we're allied with them. Sort
right.
of.
Since we're live, I have a live listener feedback, which asks the question: was our policy to help Egypt and Libya the right choice? How should our policy change, or should it change? Little right. So for Libya, you think? I personally think, I don't know what I think about it, but what I know for sure is no matter what Obama did, he'd get attacked from the right.
Oh, yeah.
He would either get, you're weak on defense and you want to, you want to allow innocent people to get killed, or you're trying to make a point. So that's the only real part I'm convinced about. I think it generally worked out well, didn't it, for Obama in the long run, or the approach in
from
the long run?
From a purely logistical standpoint, yes, I think.
Right. Which was dicey for a while, right?
Do the cost-benefit analysis on, a month and a half or 2 months. What was it? What did it end up being? Maybe it was longer than. Maybe it was 3 months.
Longer than we wanted.
But still, we were just basically supporting sorties by other NATO allies.
Right.
We're doing refueling and maybe a couple of drone strikes here and there.
Except for the guys who crashed.
Well, yeah, but then they send in MV-22s to rescue them.
That's how we roll.
We didn't lose any lives. It cost us on the orders of tens of millions instead of tens of billions of dollars.
Right. Muck around a little bit. Send some support.
I think it was hundreds of millions.
Okay, maybe hundreds of millions. But it wasn't Iraq.
Order of magnitude. That's what we learned earlier.
It wasn't Iraq. It wasn't Afghanistan kind of money. It was...
Right.
And, obviously, I am by no means supporting any of that. Because that is not a legitimate purpose of government. But if you're going to spend money on those kinds of things, that is... at least, an activity that, had a pretty good return on investment.
Right. Where are we going after Syria, then?
We will.
When? They've already smoked 5,000
of their own
citizens or something.
We only deal with the chump change.
Well, maybe we won't because they don't have oil. So, there's that.
But they're important.
How are they important?
I don't know. They muck around, don't they?
They're not important to us.
I don't know. There's some
if it were
Iranian
Lebanon,
ties there.
We'd be all over that.
Right.
Because we have a history with them. We don't have a history with Syria.
Oh, no.
So.
See, it hit the post.
And if they were killing Israelis, we'd be all over that.
Right.
But they're killing their own people, so we don't care.
Jeez. Cynical. So I think it worked out well. I think he played it safe. He did what seemed reasonable.
I don't think he could have known going into it that it would have turned out this good.
I think he played it down the middle, like he plays everything. I think Obama's a centrist, is my claim.
Well,
and I think he played it the safest as he could.
It was still a gamble.
Right. And I think it worked out.
I mean, it could have degenerated into a civil war that lasted for years.
Right.
So where does it stand now?
Huh?
In Libya, how's Libya doing now?
Well, I think they're well on their way to, defining a new independent government. And, they caught one of Gaddafi's sons. They're going to send him to the International Criminal Court in The Hague.
All right. Yeah,
America wins.
I don't know. I don't see it as a win for America. I don't know enough about it. But
since that came up, I meant to bring this up in a previous episode, but we ran out of time. What do you guys know about the International Criminal Court?
Not much. I know it's at The Hague.
Yeah.
I like cities that start with duh. I think it's kind of cool. I don't know. I mean, how many others are there?
Maybe we should be the St. Louis.
The St. Louis.
Like the Ohio State.
Right. Cities that start with duh are awesome.
Okay. I'll give you that.
issues.
The Vatican is a country.
The Vatican, that's
there
right.
You go.
And a city.
So, well, here's what I find interesting about it. The Earth has lived in a state of anarchy its entire history. Okay? So, here's me putting my anarchical spin on...
its entire history except right now.
What? There's no world government. I mean, the Earth is still in a state of anarchy.
Oh, the Earth. Okay.
Yeah. And yet, we all seem to defer to this authority, and I'm doing air quotes for those of you who can't see it, called the International Criminal Court. And we all recognize it as legitimate somehow, right? That you know, bad people are sent there and tried, and we recognize that whatever judgment is made is, you know, completely legitimate. Why is that? Why do we all recognize that as legitimate?
Fascinating. I have things to say.
I don't know why it's recognized as legitimate, but from my perspective, only the people who lose go to that court.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So
if you're Milosevic and still killing dudes, you don't show up there.
Well, no. Represent? No, I'm saying there's plenty of equivalently bad things that people on the winning side of a given war did.
Right. But they never
go there.
Yeah.
They don't get tried. It's the losers who, you lost the war, we're gonna put you on trial now. Right. It's like to the victor go the spoils kind of thing. And the loser, you don't only lose your war, but now we're gonna hammer on you some more. Send you to jail, hang you, whatever you're gonna do.
I think it's a charade, but it's an important charade. Kind of like the United Nations is another way to think about this. It's like, why do we all need to get together and give speeches and make a joint resolution of United Nations things? It's obviously silly, right? The only thing that really matters is when you get a gun pointed to you or a bomb like dropping on your head. That's the only thing that really stops dictators, right? If you're gonna, you can get together and do a joint resolution on against some kind of bad guy, you know.
Right.
Until he's got some weapons pointed at him, that's the only thing that's really gonna make a real difference. So it is kind of a charade, but it's an important charade. It's a way of showing consensus between disparate groups of people that makes a statement.
Yeah.
And that statement obviously like has no weight, you know, as far as real practical functionality. You know, if we wanted to go cap Ahmadinejad, you know, like all the resolutions and paperwork that you can imagine isn't gonna help that happen.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't sign the dotted line at the end. But it plays a role in understanding what the global consensus is. And I think that's an important role. Might not need a big building and a lot of flags, but it's important.
Okay. Well, interesting bit of trivia. The United States is not a party to the treaty that created the International Criminal Court.
That's good, because we don't want to sign up for that. We'd end up there all the time.
Yeah.
That's good. Starts with the, though. The Hague.
Yeah. Were they trying to bring Rumsfeld charges against Rumsfeld?
I had heard something along those lines, yeah. Yeah, that'll never happen.
No. It's the other great thing about the United States. Like, yeah, we're not doing that.
They're like the cool kid at the party. Yeah. We ain't coming.
Rumsfeld's been around forever.
I think he might be a vampire.
I think he was Ford's chief of staff.
Fascinating guy. Have you seen The Fog of War? That was about Robert McNamara.
I have not.
In Vietnam, it's a pretty good one. I predict something will happen similar to old Donnie Boy.
But in that movie, I recommend it. You know, it lays bare the mistakes and the errors and everything that went on that was portrayed to the public as all the things we hear that we need to do this to protect the freedom of
free citizens, you know, all that stuff that was really just tactical mistakes or strategic or political moves, you know, all these cynical type things that were presented to the public as something completely different, you know, which is obvious. I mean, it's not, I mean, people that know don't, aren't surprised, no shocks, no clutching of pearls, you know. But it was interesting to hear it laid bare, and I think in years' time, when old Donnie Boy is getting a little older and doesn't need his millions anymore, he'll fess up some. Claim. Prediction. End of year prediction. No? You don't think so? I think that guy's at the center of some stuff.
Yeah. I'm sure he is. I just thought it was funny that you said when he gets a little older, he doesn't have much farther to go.
Yeah, right. All right, well, we're going to take a little break now, and when we come back, we'll do our predictions for 2012 and see what we can come up with.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. All the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, just jingle bells, jingle all the way.
All right, we're back.
Oh, we're back.
We're gonna put on our
Nostradamus
hats and get out our crystal balls here and make some predictions for 2012. Obviously, the easy ones are who's going to win the Republican primary, who's going to win the general election.
I'll go first.
Go ahead, Rob.
Bold prediction.
I mean, what's the point of making a prediction unless it's
sure.
Bold, right?
All right.
Might as well go big.
Mitt Romney wins the Republican primary.
Okay.
Somebody splits off on some kind of right-wing third-party thing, which does nothing.
Okay.
But siphons off enough of the crazy, Obama wins.
Okay.
That's right. Just say I'm right. It's okay.
Rob's right. But if Obama loses, Michelle files for divorce. That's the Hollywood scandal side coming out.
That's nice. Where have you heard things?
No, I just...
Conspiracy
I
theory.
I see stuff, Rob.
In the tea leaves.
That's right. What she's mad about is smoking and his Kenyan background?
Yeah, he hasn't won any marathons, so...
Nice.
He seems like a good dad. Are we going to have like a Tiger Woods moment? I mean, that's a fascinating
thing. It's fascinating to think of Obama post-presidency. Hopefully it'll be in 5 more years and then in 1. But like, yeah, you know, like Clinton kind of became the elder statesman.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping Obama just goes rogue, you know, just big old beard. Just cigarette all the time, just like a wise old man. That would be awesome.
You know,
I had a lot of respect for Clinton and Bush 41 when they did their joint kind of philanthropic episode. But at the same time, I'm like, you know what? We've had this tradition in this country for hundreds of years that when you're president and you're no longer president, you just disappear.
Right,
you
right.
You don't hear from you
right.
anymore.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, and we seem to have broken with that tradition because,
right.
you know, we got Jimmy Carter going globetrotting and, you know, doing his diplomatic things and Bush and Clinton and thankfully... Bush 43 has kind of fallen off the radar, and we haven't had to hear from him. But Cheney, every chance he gets,
he's
on the news,
right.
you know,
right.
playing armchair quarterback. And I don't know. I just think that's very unseemly.
Right.
I think that's the reason we had that tradition in the first place.
Right.
You know.
Right. You pass it on.
And I think what drives me crazy about the Cheney thing is his main motivation and his little daughter Liz. You know, their main motivation is to prove their own policies. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just endlessly trying to convince people of how right they were. You know, they're not doing anything interesting. Like Jimmy Carter, at least, is in Haiti. You know, why are you in Haiti? I don't know. Just something he's into. All right, cool. Bill Clinton's doing his micro budgeting or micro loaning, or I don't know. He's doing his little Clinton-y thing, you know, which isn't quite related to his presidency. But the Cheney thing is just endlessly like, see, I was right. See, yeah. I was right. You know,
sniping at the current administration.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what Obama's like post presidency.
You brought up fundraising. Bush and Bush 41 and Clinton fundraising. They did quite a bit for the tsunami in Phuket, Thailand. Why was that something similar? It didn't seem to happen after the earthquake and tsunami in Fukushima, Japan. Why not?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is it a cultural thing where they just don't want help? They don't need help?
I don't know. Clinton's got his own little foundation going. Maybe his plate's full. Maybe he doesn't have the resources to take on something else. I don't know.
Yeah, man, I didn't bring that up. That was one of my top ideas for the evening. But
I don't know. What do you think? This is like a
I don't know why
possible conspiracy theory.
No, not a conspiracy. Just
they're afraid of Godzilla.
Yeah. Yep. No, I don't have an opinion on why it wasn't more of an outpouring, other than it's just not something Japan would accept. Their own honor code wouldn't accept that much charity. And the other thing,
they accepted an awful lot after World War II. So, we basically rebuilt their country for them.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Sorry about that bomb.
I don't know. I guess I don't have anywhere to go. But with but other than the other thing I wanted to bring up, there was no looting. You didn't hear about any looting. I just loved that.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
What a bunch of degenerates the rest of the world is when it comes to disasters and sports teams winning.
Right. And when you say rest of the world, you mean the United States, right?
No, I mean, it's happened in other countries.
Right.
It's not just... It's,
I can't think of any.
I'll find a specific example, maybe you can put it in the show notes, but I know for a fact it has happened in other countries.
Right.
You hear about looting when things go south.
Why are you
happened
against
in Europe,
the south?
In Europe, not geographically. Damn South.
Speaking of being against the South, have you forgotten a couple episodes ago when you were bad-mouthing Georgia?
That was bad-mouthing Georgia. All you Georgia listeners, big fan, go Dogs.
I happen to like the South, okay, Rob?
That's right. And I think as a prediction, as a long-term prediction, is
the South going to rise again?
No. No, I'm back on my man Obama. Because I don't think the Democratic Party will see a visionary and a leader like Obama that... Once Obama leaves, I think it's going to be a drought. Is the scheme? I think we had our FDR, then we had our Kennedys, and then you had your Clinton. Clinton was one, but then after that, who did we have? We had Gore, who's Jeremy's a big fan of.
Yeah, maybe. Gosh.
And then we had to run John Kerry. Oh my God! And I think the sequence is that we're used to a strong Democratic leader presence recently. But I think it's more of an anomaly than a pattern. I think he'll go out and we'll get a series of chump changes for a while until we get a real someone else. So I don't know what he'll do. I don't know what I'll do. But I bet he's the president and can't be president anymore.
who Democrats wish he could just be president again. Because now we got to pick from John Edwards. Oh, you know, yeah. I think that's what's going to happen. John Edwards, also a big fan for Jeremy.
Not even close to being a fan of John Edwards. I didn't like him when he was the popular choice, and I still don't like him. And the guy is a class. He's classless.
He's got nice hair, though.
No, he doesn't either.
You don't even give him nice hair?
I don't give him that. I don't give him anything. I think I didn't like him when I first saw him. I thought he was a weasel. You know, he gives used car salesmen a bad name.
Okay.
I mean, wait, I said that didn't make sense. I'm so mad. My analogy didn't even work.
Just
I'm saying, come
on, I brought up John Kerry, Al Gore, and John Edwards all together. Just how are you supposed to respond to that?
All right, John Kerry was the best of those three. That's
right.
How bad the other two are.
Right.
Okay, so the big prediction for next year.
Oh, you got a prediction.
Today is December 21st.
It is.
A year from now,
we're
it's
all
the end
toast.
Of the world, right? Teotihuacan.
The Mayans. We're all dead.
It's over?
It's the end of the 13th Bakhtin.
So, is that going to happen?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Should we put the podcast in a time capsule so if it does happen?
Yeah.
The cyborgs will rise and
we
got to
record
us?
It on a gold record and attach it to a NASA space probe and send it into space.
It's so worth it.
Don't knock
really
my
expensive.
Space probes, all right?
Jeremy's looking at me very indignantly.
We just need to respect space more, all
right? That's right. Why can't we just... Why a gold record? Why not just a paper money record?
Isn't it the same?
And we're back to where we started.
No, there's... Well, if you read the articles, they're ignoring the evidence that their calendar didn't actually end there.
Right.
So
yeah. I read that recently, too.
Yeah.
I don't believe it, though.
You don't believe that it didn't end, or you don't believe that the world's going to end?
I saw the movie, man. I saw 2012. It's all over next year.
So what should I do for the next year if I only got a year left?
Give me all your money.
I'm down with that.
Buy guns, gold, and canned goods.
This is a Tea Party platform.
If the world's ending, what's that going to do for you?
I don't know.
See?
Just in case we're wrong.
You'll have green beans.
Live it up.
Maybe it's not the world will end, but something catastrophic will happen, and you won't be able to go to the local grocery store, but you'll have all kinds of tasty frosted mini wheats.
Oh my god.
And you know what's even more than frosted mini wheats? What's even more tasty is to eat frosted mini wheats in front of really hungry people who don't have frosted mini wheats. He's like
too much beer in this episode.
Yeah. Maybe we should have stopped with one pitcher. Alright,
well, it's not gonna end.
They're putting the chairs up on the tables. So I think that probably means it's about time to call it quits. I wanna thank our listeners. And we've had some new ones join recently, and we're doing pretty good on downloads. But if you are a iTunes user, be sure to log into iTunes and rate this podcast. Give us 5 stars. And
5.
Yeah. Leave a comment on iTunes, too, to let other people know that we're worth listening to. And as always, you can find us at facebook.com/MidwestPeace or MidwestPeaceProcess.com. Send us an email at feedback@MidwestPeaceProcess.com. We'd love to hear from you. And from all of us here at JJ Twigs, we want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we will see you in January when we return to our regular schedule. But I guess that's it.
Merry Christmas.
Feliz Navidad.
To the finished listeners.
Nice.
Very nice.
All right. Bye now.
Bye. Bye.